Hey, good bloody morning to you. How are you? I'm back.
Jesus, good to see you, Roberto. Slightly sun-crisped.
Sun-crisped.
Yes.
It was warm, but that's all right.
Well, we were all sweating in our blankets here too, brother, I tell you.
You kind of go up there expecting it to be out.
What blankets? Sleeping naked under the mosquito net, more likely, but you know.
Well, that's it too.
Amazing turn in the weather though, Roberto. I'm glad you brought some of that North Queensland wet season down over the border with you.
I'm loving it.
Yeah, it's great to see the hills and streets streaming.
It certainly is.
I've got a snap, crackle and bop in my earphones.
Yeah, me too.
I wonder whether we've got any gremlins coming on the rain.
Yeah, I don't know exactly about that, but...
Riffraff should have sorted them out by now with that early morning sluice opener. Oh, Captain, it's so good to see you on the other side of the desk. I was flailing away last week.
Flailing
I was. Yeah.
Terrible sound in my head.
Anyway, I gave them a good flogging with the flail last Friday, sans Tissot, and they coped.
Oh, great. Hey, this is not working. My microphone's not working.
Well...
Maybe it's this one. Test. Okay, it's this one.
That's a hello, Bob. Good to have you.
I tell you, that gremlin was strangling you there, mate.
Bob, 1, 2, Bob.
I did that too last week. I went and had to go the whole thing, and I didn't do anything, but I just touched it and fiddled with it, and then it worked.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Good.
Okay, so
you've
got
the touch.
A loose connection in the back of the little microphone here. I'll also mention that to the man if he comes in today.
Yeah.
I'll start again. Good morning. How are you? That sounds better. I'm here at last. God. It was,
yeah, I thought you were talking to us from behind the sandbags, Roberto.
It sounded like... Yeah, clear as a bell. God, it's good to come back to God's country here, I tell you.
Your way.
Absolutely beautiful.
Well, we were right on the brink of it, and then this happened, so it's all lovely. Very lovely.
It is lovely indeed.
Easy to take.
Look, Sally and I really were going to phone up last Friday morning. We had incredible intentions and plans, and we mentioned it at about a quarter to nine. She said, the time's coming up.
You got all bamboozled, didn't you, with the Queensland daylight shaving and...
A little bit of that, but we just got tied up.
I've got all sorts of madness skipping around in my headphones. I hope that's not going anywhere near.
It's to do... See, what we actually hear, just a bit of tech talk here for all you guys.
Bit of static electricity running around between my ears.
What we're actually listening to in our headphones...
It's almost as good as a good joint.
...is what's coming fed back from a tuner in the other office, you see. It goes out through the desk and out through the transmitter and the aerial, and then we have a tuner in the office that picks it up and feeds it back to our headphones, so we actually listen to what's coming out of the top of our thing. But the crackle, the hiss and the buzz, that's not going out.
Oh, well, I'm glad of that.
It's just the tuner that we're listening to is an old crappy one. And it may be someone's bumped it and it's fractionally off. You know how it goes. Anyway, I had an awesome time while I was away. Thank you so much for covering for me, Jake.
Hey, it was a pleasure.
Yes, indeed. And getting on as I am, pushing up the years one by one, I'm finding that you're having a little bit of trouble now.
Oh, I'm having lots of trouble here, but you carry on.
Yeah, remember, it's just only in your head, because my head's clear as bell right now, so that's a good sound. You've obviously just got some little glitch happening in the background there.
I have. It's a happy little gremlin. It's most distracting.
Yeah, okay. Had a couple of great dances, just going off. Even though it was hot, I had the best boogie to Bomber, Nicky Bomber, and his band up there, mate. They are such a heart band. He did three gigs. He had massive crowds, and every gig, they one song, they pick up their instruments, three piece brass section. Nicky picks up a couple of small sort of kettle drum type things, the little ones, you know, that, I don't know what you call them, the little hard, the very, very high sound. That sort of stuff, a pair of them. And the guy on the keyboard picks up this great big bass drum, and they all just truck their way straight off the stage and into the middle of the mosh and the dance with their instruments and start playing down amongst the people, mate. And it was awesome. Just really kicked ass big time.
Bit of tribal interaction and integration going on, eh?
So I just thought that I'd come back and kick off the morning show.
Drop the bomb, mate.
With a bit of what I really was getting my teeth into.
We were counting on that.
Yeah. I'll change my mind. The last one, I'll do that one.
Okay. We might try and work out what's going on in all this electric.
I've got 15 tracks to choose from. I want to play all 15 at the same time. It was that to the concert, you know, because he just did a massive set. He was so cool. He was so good. We'll be back after this.
Monsieur Le Bomba.
Yes, indeed. He is spaced out. That's probably the only track on the whole CD I didn't hear him play.
It was going down sweetly here, man.
There was some really interesting stuff going on up there, Jack. There was a band, we've got them in the office there somewhere, in the library. I'll have to dig them out maybe a bit later on, called the Red Eyes. Remember we played a few tracks of theirs?
Yep.
At one time. Pretty, really solid reggae funk. Absolutely cool.
The New Zealand outfit?
Red Eyes, not sure. Maybe from Melbourne, actually, I think Red Eyes.
Sure.
I think Black Seeds are the Kiwi outfit, you might be thinking. They've got very similar albums, too. The covers look really similar. But anyway, it was all cool, except for the I mean, he's cool. The singer, mate, the lead singer, he, great voice. He's prancing around on stage like a cross between Michael Jackson and Mick Jagger.
Oh, yeah.
Well, behind him, this sort of hypercool band is funking out all this really cool reggae funk, and they're just still doing their scene, you know.
Yeah.
But up the front there, this guy...
A freak.
He was strutting. He was... And he's a pumped guy. He's a gym man.
Yeah.
You know, after the first track, he rips his shirt off, you know, exposing all these...
Just for the effects.
Exposing all these really well-toned pecs and so forth, the whole six-pack and more. And then he proceeds to moonwalk and stand on the foldbacks and strut like Jagger with his head back, prancing like a little horsey back and forth across the stage. Yeah. Great voice. Couldn't get into the whole showman thing at all. It just seems so out of place.
Mm.
Trying to be the showman rather than actually trying to connect with the people. It was all...
Who was that?
Red Eyes.
Yeah.
It was all the sort of stuff you do in your bedroom with the door locked in front of the mirror when you're 17, 16, 15, you know?
Yeah.
You practice the strut. You can tell he'd practice.
I don't think I ever did that. I watched someone on a movie doing that last night. And I don't think I've ever done that, actually. Taking a quick glimpse to see if the zit's on the end of my nose in that age. You know?
Yeah.
Don't think I've ever practiced my strut.
You never practiced
as such.
Or as such to see just how you look.
Yeah
exactly.
Yeah.
But the music, absolutely awesome. I saw this other band too, Martin Martini and the Bone Palace Orchestra.
Fantastic.
Yeah, wonderful title.
The Bone Palace Orchestra. We're standing in it, baby.
We certainly are. And they were, let me think, two, three, four, five. They were a little six-piece outfit also from Melbourne. A lot of Melbourne bands up there this year, I guess, heading up for the North.
As we've noticed from the mail slot, there's a lot of things issuing out of Melbourne.
Absolutely. And they came up from Melbourne, and on their way up, as they passed through Brisbane, they grabbed themselves these four dancers, three girls and a guy.
Yeah, I was gonna say, look, damn the front man strutting. What about the three-girl chorus? What do they look like, bro?
Well, this guy, he grabbed these four dancers. They weren't the chorus. They didn't sing. They danced out the front. They
shook their finery.
Well, yeah, Martin Martini and his Bone Palace Orchestra are a very interesting band. They're very musically tight, experimental. Martin and the band remind me a little bit of the Weasels Ripped My Flesh era of Frank.
Oh, yeah,
a little bit out there. He's got an album out. It's a bit of a concept album, a bit after the Jethro Tull Thick as a Brick style of concept. It follows this theme all the way through.
Oh, right.
And really, it's sort of like post-apocalyptic lust, I think, is how... I'm not sure how exactly...
That's right up our alley there, son.
It's certainly... I had a great... It was... Okay.
We were actually more involved in the pre-apocalyptic life.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess you'd have to be under 20 to be really appreciating the post-apocalyptic last in your life, wouldn't you?
Apart from Martin, who is the keyboard player, the author of all the songs and the lead vocalist, and he was very animated. And the incredible girl, Billie Jean, her name is, at playing the violin.
Born to rock and roll.
Oh, absolutely. Billie Jean Clancy.
Oh, yeah.
And she's a wicked little fiddler, I tell you. She was rocking it out. And she sort of had this little fixed grin, and her head went back and forth like those dogs in the back seat of the car.
Yeah, in the back of the Italian Valiant around Footscray.
Yeah, and the rest of the band had expressions as if they'd been dead for two or three years. They just stood and they stared at a point in space.
Were they trying to make her look really animated?
There was just their guys. I think they were supposed to be like Living Dead.
Menace.
Zombies. Like the first track on the album's called Out of the Ground.
And that's what I was going to say, menas, like those big standing stones that don't move a lot.
Yeah, and they came in from the back of the hall playing this Out of the Ground track, right?
Sort of things that Obelix carted around for Asterix
I mean, we've got a list of titles on the album. Out of the Ground, The Ship is Sinking, No More, Dream Until You Die, Fitzroy, Fitzroy, Take Your Skin Off and Dance, Poor John, The World is Broken, Jesus Ain't Too Far Away. Okay. All right. So
just keep him at arm's distance will do.
Okay. Yeah. So you get the general gist. The dancers were goth porn. Okay, oh, yeah. Three girls and a guy. The guy's dressed as a donkey with a long tail. My goodness, what a naughty tail he had. And they proceeded to dance and tear each other's clothes off and abuse each other with whips and lollipops and all sorts of stuff in the foreground. All with this... Get back, microphone. All with this, like, fixed face. All the actions, all the sexuality. The fixed face are a fucking good dance troupe. I tell you, they really worked their nuts off. Or if they hadn't... They really, it was hardcore. It was hardcore stuff, and they worked for an hour in the blistering heat.
Amazing,
very physical routine.
You know? I love a hot, sweaty dancer.
Yeah. And with Martin in the background, I'm going to play you a track off the Martin Martini and the Bone Palace Orchestra live at the famous Rainbow Hotel.
And slip to you through the play space on 102.3 NIM FM, your community camel.
Track 6 lined up here. Take
Let's
your
go,
skin
Roberto.
Off and dance. It's 9:15, NIM FM.
In the mall, he'll give you money in advance. there'll be no more.
Martini, the Bone Palace Orchestra, live at the Rainbow Hotel. Perhaps not your taste. It all depends. I mean, I like that sort of shit, but there you go. I've got lots of stuff at home that nobody else likes to listen to. I can't play that one in the house if a wife's home either. She saw the show. She wasn't impressed. She says, oh, look, I'm sorry, sleaze and porn just don't do it for me. Oh, well. Moving right along and speaking of sleaze and porn, good morning, Marie.
Good morning, Bob. How are you today?
How are you?
It's lovely to be on the airwaves with you on UMFM.
Lovely to have you slipped in here with us.
Ooh.
I've lost something, or do you have it? Do you have the card? You have the card.
Yes.
That's all right. It's I just wondered which track. He was track 11. It's all right, just dialing him. Dialing. Hello, is that track 11? Coming in, please. It's an interesting day today here in Australia. We haven't actually spoken about it yet. Jack and I were going to have a little chat about it as well, but I pushed the wrong button. I'll try that one there instead. That's better. Okay, sorry about that. Trying to do two things at once, and we all know men can't do that. So you'll just have to bear with me while I fuck around and do things back to front. But as of midnight last night, and I've already broken the law, by the way. It's nice to break a law before breakfast, I reckon. I was on the internet last night at 1 minute past 12, and I discussed in a chat room environment euthanasia with another fellow Australian.
Euthanasia.
I discussed whether or not this particular woman was in favour or against euthanasia, what she thought about it, what she thought were good ways to do it. And 1 minute past 12, and I mean, she wasn't in any way contemplating it.
Mm-hmm.
Not by a long chalk, but I really felt that I wanted to register my distaste for this law which came into force at midnight last night, making it an offence to discuss euthanasia via email, on the internet, in a chat room environment, or on the telephone. Funnily enough, we are allowed to discuss it here on broadcast radio. I'm not quite sure what that's about, especially if you had a specialised talkback program and you were giving advice to people via talkback. I can't see what the difference is. Perhaps it's because it's not private.
Well,
I think that's the whole thing, is that because it's out in the open, because people can hear that we're discussing euthanasia and people can hear what I'm saying and hear what the other person's saying, and I guess they feel that the authorities will then be warned if we decide to do naughty things to our own selves. But
euthanasia has been a touchy subject ever since it was first brought up in the Northern Territory in 1995. Ever since then, some people have had a very strong objection to this subject being discussed.
Okay.
So since 1995, and right up until midnight last night, it has been quite controversial. Now, whether it'll stay controversial, given that it's illegal to use a carrier service to discuss in any way euthanasia in Australia.
Yep.
I find it quite bizarre that you and I can discuss it on radio, but it is not a carrier as they describe it to be.
Okay.
So we're not actually being illegal, but if you and I were to be on the telephone talking about doing a radio program on euthanasia, we would be illegal.
Isn't that interesting?
Mm.
I mean, the law was apparently brought, and this is so typical of laws that are rushed in by halfwits. And I'm assuming that Perrin is in that category of the half wit, although he may only make it to a quarter wit. Hard to tell sometimes. But they bring in these knee-jerk reactions. Apparently the law was brought in to stop teenagers discussing teenage suicide in those suicide chat rooms, none of which, by the way, are hosted in Australia. So there's no way that this law being passed can in any way hinder the what's that word?
Well, what actually happened, and we're going back to 2004 at this point, the government was looking at new legislation for what was called the Crimes Legislation Amendment,
yeah.
Telecommunication Offences and Other Measures Bill, 2004. Now, that bill contained a section on suicide material, and the rest was mostly dealing with child pornography over the internet.
Righto.
So both of the subjects got lumped into one. And in August of 2004, the suicide material was segregated out of that and put into its own bill called the Criminal Code Amendment Suicide-Related Material Offences Bill 2004. So it became
this is a federal bill?
This was on the marker to be a federal bill.
Okay.
Now, the Constitutional and Legal Committee of the Australian Senate called for submissions from certain parties, including, of course, Dr. Philip Nitschke, to present his case. Now, that was supposed to have happened on August 30, 2004. On August 29, John Howard called the next federal election, the committee was disbanded, and it didn't go any further.
Okay.
That's actually its little history.
Okay, fine.
So
I didn't
now
know that.
It's reared itself up again, and of course, Dr. Philip Nitschke is big in Australia. He's known as Dr. Death. I know Philip personally, a very, very
good
person.
No. He's not Dr. Death. Dr. Death's that guy that was from Townsville
from
that killed all the
but
patients.
He came after Philip Nitschke.
He was Dr. Death.
Well, Philip Nitschke, he's
I know that the press called him Dr. Death. I'm sure that the people that dealt with him didn't call him Dr. Death.
No.
They called him Philip.
Philip. He's actually a really genuine, down-to-earth activist-type person.
Okay.
Now, he's got what's called Exit International, so that you could normally Google onto the web and you could come up with information.
Yeah. As of midnight last night, when you go to Philip's site, you're redirected to now a New Zealand-based
correct
server.
Yes.
And it's the New Zealand Voluntary Euthanasia Association's website.
That's right. Now, in Australia,
yep,
Exit International still exists on a political level, but
yes,
on a counselling workshop level, it exists in New Zealand.
Yeah. The phone calls are also diverted
they're
now to New Zealand.
They're all going through to New
yes
Zealand because it's illegal to discuss this subject on Australian telephones.
Yeah. Although an Australian discussing it over to a New Zealand telephone makes, what, just the Australian guilty?
Well, I don't know how this is going to work.
Are we
going
to extradite the Kiwi phone operator?
I mean, if I rang my president of NIMFM and said, right, I want to put the subject of euthanasia out, you and I are both in trouble. Now, how are they going to censor us? How are they going to find us? How are they going to bring us before their courts? This is all untested. We're going to have to check this little bit out as we go along.
Let's have a little bit of a listen. Hang on, there's a phone going. And while... I'll get the phone later. Thank you. Let's just have a little bit of a listen to the quarter wit and some of his explanations as to why he thought this whole situation needed to come about.
Who are you playing right now? Marshall Perrin, your success in being able to get that private members bill up in the Territory and then to have Kevin Andrews overrule it with his private members bill, do you think it was religion that won out in the long run?
Absolutely, without question, that Kevin Andrews and the band of supporters that he gathered in federal parliament, including members from all the political parties, but certainly the Liberal Party and the Labor Party were very heavy in his campaign, religiously based campaign, to overturn the Territory legislation. Sadly, that group of people were successful with their strategy.
Would you put a bill like that up again if you could?
Absolutely. In fact, I'm pleased to say that even reviewing the legislation today, sort of almost less than a decade since it was passed, to say what would you change about it if you were going to introduce it again tomorrow, and there's almost nothing that I would change anyway. Others may feel differently. I think it was a very good piece of legislation that sort of covered all the bases, as it were, and would be a model for someone to use elsewhere.
On a personal level, how did you feel when your bill was vetoed?
Well, I was just devastated, shattered, disappointed, angry. There was nothing I could do about it. I knew that once federal parliament had voted for it, not by very much in the Senate, mind you, only about four votes in the Senate tipped it over. In the House of Reps, the vote was stronger against us. But it had to get through both houses, and the Senate was our last hope, where the senators, we would hope, would support the states' rights issue as distinct from voluntary euthanasia. The federal parliament shouldn't be overturning state parliaments, and that's basically what they did, even though we were a territory. They actually just overturned what a democratically elected parliament had already done. And that made me really angry, because I knew that it was sort of the end of the road. There was nothing else I could do to reverse it. Other than become an activist, which I am, to advocate that similar legislation should get passed in any of the Australian states, because the federal parliament can't interfere then.
Is voluntary euthanasia a human rights issue?
Yes, it is. Absolutely. It's about the individual autonomy that we each should have when we are on our deathbed, basically, that we ought to be able to determine the timing and manner of our own death. That's what it's all about.
Do you think there is a strong groundswell nationwide to have this human rights access for everyone?
Across the country, without any doubt whatsoever, there's a roughly 75% support for voluntary euthanasia legislation. Sadly, although that has been the case for quite some years now, we can't quite get the politicians to take notice of that 75%. They all seem to think that they are holier than thou, and somehow they know best.
Do you think that the voluntary euthanasia bill is about to rear up strongly within the next election?
No, I don't think it will. I think the major parties have the ability to control the election agendas. The taxation issues, health issues, education, all of the issues you see the Howard and the Leader of the Opposition talking about on the paper and in the news every day today, they will be the issues, the economy, taxation. They'll be the issues that feature prominently in the coming federal election. It's almost impossible to get an issue like voluntary euthanasia up on the agenda nationally. You can get it covered in small areas of the media, small localised areas around the country will cover it, but it will not gain anywhere near the strength needed to actually determine the numbers in the Federal House.
Okay, that was a little bit there from Marshall, but I'd just like to issue a huge big apology to Marshall Perrin. I actually had him confused with somebody quite different at the time when I was bad-mouthing the man himself, and I for some reason had him in my head down as the person who had introduced this private members bill into federal parliament last. It was passed in July 2005, so it was probably introduced, I would say, in May or June sometime. And for some reason, Marshall's name was in my brain as
Marshall Perrin is the man who got it up to the whole thing to start off with in the Northern Territory in 95. And it was Kevin Andrews' bill in 96 or 97, I should say,
that knocked it back.
That knocked the whole thing down.
So I'm a little bit in the dark right now, and I'll have to go back to my sources and check it out. So I'm a bit in the dark as to who introduced this nefarious and insidious little piece of legislation that has really curtailed our rights to free speech in so many different areas, in so many different ways too. There's look, I'm going to play a track from Nina Cherry. We'll get back to this in just a minute, because I want to talk to Jack about euthanasia as well as you. We'll all have a big threesome here in the studio. It'll be fun. Be back in just a second.
Why don't you take a look at your own first?
A bit of sweet cherry.
Isn't she delicious? I love a bit
raw
of stone
like sushi.
Bit of stone fruit in the morning. It's just so tasty. We were talking about descent and about what people can do.
And the long list of verbotens.
The long list of verboten. Because as of last night, it's verboten to discuss the euthanasia on the internet or on
telephones. Euthanasia come here in busloads.
I know they do every day.
Yeah.
Buy our goods and go away again. I mean, it's a wonderful program, this euthanasia program, I think. Bring them over here.
Yeah, bring them on.
Load them full of trinkets and send them home again.
Yeah.
But this assault upon our free speech is truly horrendous. I mean, it's the terrorist thing and now the death thing. I mean, there's no stopping. I was just saying out there in our mighty hallway to my compadres here that now that this legislation's through and there's this subject matter which is verboten, you must not
sex,
speak about
death
this.
And polytricks, mate.
Sex, death.
Not in polite company.
That's a tricker. Sex, death.
Which means
and
we're safe
politics.
Here in the play space.
We're very safe here.
We never claim to be polite.
No one polite here. But what they can do now, of course,
is they can
tack on amendments to the verboten bill and just add on other subject matter that's verboten. I don't think we'll talk about bottoms anymore.
No, we'll just drive another nail in the coffin of free speech in Australia.
Any discussion on the internet or on telephones of the glutamus maximus will be punishable by, I think, a week or two at a boot camp.
It's a good thing we're proficient at banging nails through it and adapting it for radio, Roberto.
Hey, Bob, they're actually saying that an individual would be fined $120,000 for talking, and if you're an organisation, $400,000.
Goodness gracious me.
Oh, well, the infamous and infamous.
Oh,
hopefully they've got deep pockets.
Oh, to be rich enough to afford their fines.
They wouldn't get any blood out of this little stone in the wall, mate.
But as we're speaking this morning here at 20 to 10 on NIM FM 102.3, Nimbin Community Radio Station, the voice of the Bundjalung Nation, as we speak here, there are about 30 elderly people, like in the real twilight of
their life.
Sending
the Prime Minister some instructions for the liberty.
Exactly. And
Don't you love it?
They're emailing John Howard detailed instructions of how he should go about hanging himself.
Canadian plastic bag or the last thrill pill in the deal?
The last thrill pill, yeah, the peaceful pill, the Canadian plastic bag. There's
a lot of peace to the nation if he'd buy it.
Oh, I don't know how John's going to take it, really.
It might save him putting in an appearance in The Hague in a few years' time, mate.
Yeah, yeah, just...
There's a quick way and there's a slow way to go, you know that. We're going to roast him over a slow fire, mate.
I reckon just set his feet in concrete somewhere out in our great brown land where the temperature's rising beyond the pale.
And that smirking abacus twiddler beside him, he's got to go too, mate.
The smirking abacus... Well, it doesn't cost much for...
Mean
two
Pete
little
Bean Counter, you know the man I refer to.
Two little sets of concrete shoes, they can stand facing each other.
Yeah.
Concreted down to our wonderful desert floor while the sun...
We could sort of swing them off a derrick off the front of the Benelong Point there out front of the Opera House. We could have a major, a major get-together at the Opera House just to see these two swing, eh?
That'd be nice. Off the derrick.
Look, I do believe that there is space with... what's his name? He was the head of Iraq. Saddam Hussein. There's space for Saddam Hussein, yes.
Think so?
In his cell, yes.
In his cell. That's nice. I don't know if Saddam feels like sharing.
Line them up like a row of tuned farts.
What a lovely thought. Look, we're just going to have... it says that's only got 5 seconds. That can't be correct.
I believe in individuality. We could park them in their own slots, Roberto.
31.
That'd be a messy little pile, wouldn't they?
They would. I'm just fiddling with my mini.
I noticed. It's great to look at, but it doesn't do much for the ear drives.
Would you like to just correct that on that card then, please, Murray? That's quite incorrect. Spin the plates.
Do the juggle.
It's going to fall! No, it's all under control. We're just going to have another little 7 minutes.
It's as under control as it ever were.
Exactly. 7 minutes and 4 seconds. Slip away. We're going to have a little... Is this you again, Mari, interviewing?
Yeah, this is where I interviewed Philip Nitschke when he was in Gunalabar in 2004.
Okay, so he was here.
He was running a seminar or a conference over in Gunalabar, so I was able to catch up with him. But he was back in town only a matter of 6 or 8 weeks ago.
Mm.
But I didn't know about it, unfortunately.
And now he's moved to New Zealand.
Yes.
Now
I
he's
wish
moved
I had
to New Zealand.
Him.
Yeah. Isn't it interesting watching the flow go the other way across the Tasman? Have you noticed that? Like, for ages, it was one-way traffic. It was all Kiwis coming over here. the land of milk and honey and opportunity. And now, mate, there's a veritable flood. Not only the Kiwis rushing home, there's all their Aussie compadres are joining them saying, gee, Dunedin's a great little town, isn't it? Don't you love the feeling of the...
bit of sea changing and tree changing and knee changing going on, eh?
Sea wind and... Because you can't enjoy the heat, but you've got to find something, because seriously, it's one of the few sane places left on this planet to live, New Zealand. Yes. Think about that. I'm going to play a little bit of Philip Nietzsche, Dr. Death, as his detractors loved to call him. What a wonderful...
Dr. Liberty, we like to refer to him as.
Exactly, Dr. Freedom.
Philip Nietzsche, thank you for speaking with NIM FM.
Well, thank you.
Philip, what's... in your opinion, what is voluntary euthanasia?
Well, it's come to mean in society today the idea that people can have some degree of control over their end-of-life choices, that they might be able to pick the time, and I suppose to a lesser degree the manner of their own death, and it's usually seen in the context of serious illness. In other words, a way in which people who are seriously ill can decide that they've had enough and peacefully end their lives.
What is the current political stance on voluntary euthanasia?
Well, because it involves giving people the chance to be able to end their lives, there's total opposition to it from, in fact, both major parties are refusing to in any way engage in this issue. So we have the Conservatives and the Labor Party not wishing to go down this path. Well, there are some individuals within each party who have been supportive, of course, but the majority of the politicians simply will not engage in this. Now, that's different for Greens and Democrats, where they'd be much more in favour of the idea of introducing a law which would allow you, if you satisfy certain prerequisites and criteria, that you're seriously ill, you've had your palliative care options explained, you're not depressed, and all the rest of it, if you satisfy those criteria, then you can get lawful help to die. And that's what we briefly had in the Northern Territory, which is the first place in the world to ever have it legal to help a person in that situation to die. That's been overturned by the federal government, and there's no likelihood that any state government or federal government of Australia, at least, is going to go back down that path.
Is it a regular thing for people to make contact with you to discuss their method to die?
Oh, very much so, because, I mean, having, in a sense, had that experience of 8 months in the Northern Territory when it was possible, and, of course, everyone in Australia knew what was happening, it created quite a need. I mean, many people now know what is possible. They're annoyed that the politicians simply don't have the courage to visit this area, but they still want to know what's available to them now, and so I get contacted all the time. People say, look, I want to know what drugs I can get so that if I take them, I'll have a peaceful death. And you really need to know, it's quite a specialised area, you need to know about the issue if you want to have reasonable control. People don't want to take chances, they don't want to make a mistake. They want to know that if they do take anything to put an end to their suffering, that it will work. And so that kind of issue is one of the reasons people's need for that information, that people come along to these workshops that we run in increasing numbers.
Where are these workshops and what do you teach?
Well, we have to tread a pretty fine line, because to advise or to counsel or to assist someone to suicide in Queensland is life imprisonment, in New South Wales is 20 years jail. So it's a serious crime, even though suicide is not a crime at all. So it's quite a paradox. So we have to be very careful at these workshops. So we say we are not encouraging people to suicide at all, but what we are doing is answering their questions, making sure they know, they have access to accurate information, so that they know that if they do that or do this or whatever, that they will be able to know that they will have a peaceful death. In other words, we're empowering people through giving them the knowledge they need. That's not encouraging them to suicide. Many people, when they find out the answers to their questions, they move away from that option. It's just making sure that people have accurate access to the factual material they need.
It sounds to me as though it lands in the Human Rights Court.
Well, I think so. I mean, I think that the fact that we are, our society, or our governments at least, have gone to great lengths to make sure people simply don't have access to the information they need to have this degree of control is something which is hard to explain. I mean, it's a fundamental, I think, a fundamental human right to decide when or not your life is seriously unsatisfactory, and that you should have the choice to be able to put an end to it. It's only your choice, no one else's. Now, to deny people that right, which is what we do, we say, well, you can't have that right, you can do everything else, but you will not allow you to be able to have the information or access to the drugs or whatever to be put up to put an end to it, is a crime, and yet that's what our society does.
In the workshops, people attending, are you saying that at the end of it they have an idea of how to be able to end their own life?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, we go down that course. We talk, it's not just about that, we talk about depression, we talk about palliative care, so people understand, and we talk about the law, of course, so people know exactly the background in which this fits. But then, of course, we talk about drugs, we talk about non-drug methods, plastic bags, carbon monoxide, things like that. When people leave the workshops, they've got a pretty clear idea about what does provide access to peaceful death, what doesn't. We then run a more advanced several workshops, so-called construction workshops, when people will actually go to the process of developing something for themselves, some way that they might themselves use. Because the point is that while suicide is not a crime, and if you do everything yourself, you're not breaking the law. So that's why people want to come along and learn what it is they have to do. And it's far better they do that while they're well. The average age coming to workshops is 75. They're not young people, but mostly they're well. And it's better that you do it while you're well, rather than leaving it till you become quite sick, because then, of course, it's too late off, and you then have to ask your son or your daughter or your husband or wife to go out and perhaps help you, and that's when you get into serious legal trouble, because people that are helping are committing serious crimes. And so we try to make sure that people think ahead, prepare themselves, find out what they need to know, come to workshops, and then they can put themselves into a position where they really do feel that they're empowered, and they know that, well, if things get too bad, they at least have got a way to a peaceful death. People live longer when they've got that knowledge. They feel like they're back in control.
What is the peaceful pill?
Well, it's a metaphor, I suppose. It's a concept, but basically it's something that you build yourself, like you had a common, easy to obtain ingredients, you put it together in the kitchen, and you know that when you take that, it will give you a peaceful death. Now, we've been working on it for a long time, because obviously if you do it yourself, if you get the ingredients, if you put it together, manufacture it yourself, knowing that if you take it, you'll get a peaceful death, no crime, no law is broken. Of course, you've got to know how to do it, and it's got to exist. And so we've been working on various, if you like, models for the peaceful pill. There are drugs that you can get which are that good, but they're very, very hard to get. This is a sort of a do-it-yourself, a drug that you make yourself, which is as good as the best drug, which is Nembutal, and very hard to get. So this is a way, if you like, of empowering yourself in a way which doesn't break any laws.
What is the Canadian plastic bag?
Well, when people have had trouble getting access to, I mean, it's true that the drugs which give a peaceful death are very hard to come by, and people say, what else can I do? Do I have to use drugs? And the answer is no. I mean, surprisingly, perhaps, and people often don't like the thought of this, and I can understand that, but actually a plastic bag, if you put a plastic bag, put your head into a plastic bag and have it around your neck, not tight, just around your neck loosely, you breathe very easily, but the oxygen drops inside the bag, and surprisingly, perhaps, it's a peaceful death. Some people think it's not very aesthetic, and I can understand that. They don't like the thought of the plastic bag, but it's not a macabre, frightening, dreadful death associated when you can't breathe. That's something like something that stops you physically or mechanically breathing is terrifying. This is not like that. People breathe easily, the oxygen level drops, and they go to sleep and die.
There we go.
Oh, right.
Philip Nietzsche.
Well, autonomy is a wonderful thing, Roberto.
Yes, indeed.
And the invisible hand mob would like to control us from cradle to grave.
They certainly would.
And have us sit at the feet of their patriarchal judgment and, you know, work on the every sperm is sacred theory. But then some of us beg to differ.
Well, some of us do. And some of us have been attempting probably as long as we've been here to have control over our lives and where we're going.
Yeah, I'm all for autonomy and introspection and a little bit of insight allied to empathy can get you along.
Interesting what Philip was saying there, and I heard the same thing expressed only recently in an article in the Weekend Australian, which also had a very pro-euthanasia article, which I found quite surprising. But then again, I guess Murdoch's getting towards that part of his life too, isn't he? So maybe he doesn't mind his papers being a bit pro about things like that. But it mentioned how when people have this option to sort their options,
they feel more in charge of themselves, and
they live a happier, more carefree existence until it's time for them to go. It's just so.
Well,
so it's baldly obvious and so blatant.
It's all very well hanging out in the front veranda watching the buses go past, but you need a back door in life.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
A shortcut. And it's like Philip said right in the beginning, it is a religious thing. The Catholics are just adamantly 100% against it, and the Protestants don't feel real good about it. But it's primarily the Catholic push, and I guess these days too the Muslim push. I mean, the only acceptable suicide, as far as I know, maybe I could be correct on it, but the only acceptable suicide isn't seen as such. It's in jihad when a holy warrior destroys himself at the same time as destroying the enemy.
Yeah, but that's been...
I know, but I think...
Justification for all sorts of madness in recent times.
It has, and it still is too. But and maybe I'm even incorrect about that too. I don't really know a lot about
that's how crazy it all is amongst all these God botherers, I reckon. They reckon that one good soldier doing it for Allah's cool if he takes out 60 innocents.
Yes.
But one innocent doing it on their terms in their time, taking no prisoners and passing no judgments...
That rattles the foundations of humanity,
that rattles the core mentality somewhat and... Oh, it's not, they're just sheep, I reckon, and they get worried about the goats, and especially the wolves.
The wolves, yes.
Yes.
Ah-oh-ah!
another crab, Gav. And grab yourself a cab, Sav. Put her on the tab, Kev. There's a good lad. And you, Shell, want to give her a whirl? She's a good girl, went to a good school. Don't be a fool, Phil. Give her a thrill. Here's, take this pill. Get him from Bill. It's all right, keep you going all night, right? Don't be a dill. Get in for the kill.